Welcome, listeners, to www.ironradio.org, the website and podcast for all things strength sports and sports nutrition. With your hosts, Lonnie Lowry.
I almost hate to use the word educational.
Charles Staley.
And I failed phys ed and English all the way through high school.
Phil Stevens.
I guess I'm kind of the dark horse here.
And Rob Fortress Fortney.
But there really is no secret.
Thanks for listening.
Okay, welcome, ironradio.org listeners. This is Lonnie Lowry. I'm a nutrition professor and an exercise physiology professor, and I'm a bodybuilding enthusiast.
Absolutely. Guys, I'm Robert Fortress Fortney, former editor at Muscle Mag International, former competitive bodybuilder and powerlifter. And I guess, guys, we have to say this is probably our Halloween episode, so Phil, you might want to cue up some, I don't know, wolf cries or something.
Oh, hey, I didn't even think about that. Now you caught me. You caught me off guard here. But there you go.
Yeah.
This is Phil Stevens, strength coach, powerlifter, Highland Games athlete, showman, competitor, and founder of liftforhope.org. Jeez, Rob. Okay. On the show today, we got Dave Whitley. Dave's a professional performing all-time strongman, master RKC instructor, CKFMS, and owner of Nashville Kettlebell. It can be found at NashvilleKettlebell.com or the Iron Taper, DaveWhitley.com. Dave, thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much. Happy Halloween. I love
there
that
you
wolf.
Go.
Love it.
I'll try and add it in 5-6 more times today.
Yeah, I'll do the whole show just in zombie language. I'll be like, and
there you go.
Beam. You guys can just interpret whatever I'm going to say.
I became familiar with Dave when I bought his DVD that came out, Lessons of Old Time Strongman, and just had to get him on the show, so I called him up. We'll get into some of that here in a little bit, but let's talk about you, Dave. How did you get your start? I mean, you talk a lot about the lineage of strength, and then you mentioned a few influential people. But how did you get your start in all this?
Well, if you want to go back to the very beginning, I was a kid, and I was fat, and I had a stutter, and I hated book report day, and The Incredible Hulk started coming on TV, and I saw Lou Ferrigno and realized that was a human being with paint, and that it was possible for somebody to become big and strong like a comic book guy, that it wasn't just fantasy. That's the very beginning of it. The more recent beginnings of it is in about 2002, I started playing around with kettlebells after being kind of a traditional body part, bodybuilding style gym enthusiast. And that sort of started me on a journey backwards in time, and I wound up finding out more and more about guys like Arthur Saxon and Herman Gerner and Sigmund Breitbart, Sig Klein, all these sorts of guys through getting into kettlebells and kind of just researching the history of stuff and trying to figure out how these guys got to be so freaking strong. And along the way, I did a few interviews for a website for a product I was selling on a website with some the stronger people that I had gotten to meet, one of whom was Dennis Rogers. And so Dennis Rogers turned me on to the whole idea of the old time performing strongmen, bending steel, tearing phone books, decks of cards, all of that sort of stuff. So that's the very short version. When I was a kid, I wanted to be the Hulk, and I think I've come about as close as humanly possible to doing that so far.
I mean, I think it's pretty neat. Like I said, you talk a lot about the lineage and, you know, the importance of knowing the footsteps we walk in. And across the board, I don't care if you're talking strength or art or anything else, it seems people always look at the end, and they never want to go back and look at how and who got there. You know?
Yeah.
And that's a lot of where it comes from. And people just want to skip steps, you know, B through X and go right from A to Z. But
well, there's that, and then there's also people that will look at the end result and think that is the beginning. You know, think that something like swinging a kettlebell is something new, and it's not. I mean, I've got a copy of one of Alan Calvert's books that was published in 1924, and he spends several paragraphs talking about the kettlebell swing being one of the fundamental exercises that you do to attain super strength. And the book is actually Super Strength by Alan Calvert. And he talks about how it teaches the ability to move the legs and the back in conjunction with each other ballistically. He talks about how it's good for timing and bracing yourself when you're moving with a load. So there's nothing new with any of this stuff. And anybody who presents it as being new is just being disrespectful, in my opinion.
Or ignorant that it is, in fact, not nothing new.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, you mentioned some of those names that you did earlier, like Sig mm-hmm. Klein and all these types of guys, and it's that's going back a lot of decades. And these are, of course, big names to guys like us, but it's amazing to me how a lot of young guys, like 20-year-old guys, they're ignorant to even guys that existed like 15, 20 years ago in mm-hmm. the realm of, muscle building and muscle weight training and all that kind of stuff.
Oh, yeah, there are guys that think that Dorian Yates is old school.
Yeah.
And that's no disrespect to Dorian. I love Dorian Yates. For his accomplishments and stuff, but he was the beginning of the new era in a lot of ways, I think, of the freaky comic book looking bodybuilder. And so when people talk about a guy like Dorian or a guy like Lee Haney or even Arnold being old school, it just shows how young they are and how little they've been around it.
Yeah, but I find a lot of young people seem to be, maybe it's just my perception because I'm not 20 years old anymore, but they seem less inclined than my generation, I'm 40, to actually being interested in the kind of guys that you're talking about. It's like they don't care if these people existed more than 10 years ago. It's kind of like, out of the realm of their interest, which I think is very sad because, you want the legacy of these guys to continue, You have to kind of know where you've been to know where you're going kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And I agree with you on that. I think that I'm 40 as well. I'll be 41 next month. But I feel like I'm going to sit around this whole show and talk about these kids today don't know anything. Because I really do think that it may have a lot to do with the availability of information. With the internet now, you can just go click a button and find out whatever you want to find out or waste time in new and unusual ways. But if you're the same age as me, you probably remember having to go to the library and actually pull one of those things called a book off a shelf to look things up.
Oh, yeah,
up
micro.
Know something.
For sure.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So I think maybe since the information is so readily available, people don't value it as much, if that makes any sense.
Absolutely, because I'm a huge music guy too, and I've always said the same thing about music in the kind of the contemporary age. There's so much availability and so much of it that people no longer appreciate it because people could just get it for free, download whatever they want. So I think you're definitely onto something with that. I think there's just so much that people just don't appreciate anymore.
Yeah,
for sure. Kind of move on here. I want to touch on, I know you've seen and been around a lot of big, strong people. What are some of the most impressive feats of strength across the board you've seen?
That I've seen personally?
Yeah.
From people who are alive now. One of the most amazing things I've ever seen was Dennis Rodgers stood about 4 feet away from me and bent a quarter into a shape like a taco shell.
Oh, wow.
And that's one of those things that everybody can identify with how almost literally impossible it is. I don't know anybody else that could do that. And he did it with his hands. So, it's not like he did it with a pair of pliers or he even did it with his teeth or anything like that. He held onto it with his fingers and did that, which is one of the most remarkable things I've ever seen anybody do.
Yeah.
Let's see, what else? Slim the Hammer Man, who I got to go hang out and spend some time with about a month ago. He's 76 years old, and he's still stronger at what he does than anybody else on the planet. I've seen him bend some things that weren't ever meant to be bent, and levering up with one hand from the ground, levering a sledgehammer that weighs 23 pounds, which let me explain a little bit about what levering from the ground is. If you laid the hammer down on the ground, so that the handle and the head were both on the ground, and you got down in a kneeling position and held on to the butt end of the hammer as far away from the handle as you can get, and you keep the end of the hammer on the ground, and just using your wrist strength, you raise the hammer up until it's vertical.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A 23-pound hammer.
When you explained it, I was like, okay, now I get it. Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah, it's tough. It's tough stuff. I mean, I enjoy levering hammers, and the heaviest hammer that I've got is 16 pounds. And to think that that's, you know, another 6 or 7 pounds on top of that. And I know that when he was in his prime between his 40s and 50s, he was doing heavier stuff than that, up around the 30-pound mark. So pretty insane stuff.
How about with yourself, you know, from all the different things you've done, from RKC to Strongman, this and that, what's kind of been your... what's the hardest thing for you to accomplish? Or the
hardest thing for me to accomplish is getting my day going without a cup of coffee. No, the most of the stuff that I do is, for lack of a better term, pretty standard strongman stuff. I scroll pieces of steel, I bend nails, you know, short steel stuff, tear phone books, tear decks of cards, that sort of stuff. And that stuff kind of goes in phases. You know, I'll get really, really enamored of a particular feat and kind of get consumed by working on that particular feat for a few months and, you know, achieve a certain level of success with it, and then something shiny will come along, so I'll move on to something else. Lately, my thing, since I went to see Slim last month, has been levering the hammer. And so I've been working a lot with that. I got, just a couple days ago, I got 9 reps consecutively with my right hand with that 16-pound hammer, so I feel pretty good about that. One of the feats that I've been working on and continuing to polish is it's not anything new, and I'm not trying to act like I invented anything, but it's a combination feat of a couple of different things that I put together, and I haven't seen anybody else do it, but I've seen people do the components of it, just not put together in the way that I do it. And it's what I do is I take a kettlebell, and with my left hand, I lie down flat on my back and get into position and roll up and do a Turkish get-up with it. When I get to that half-kneeling position right before I stand up for the get-up, I lever a sledgehammer the same way I described earlier and then stand up with it. And with left arm locked out overhead with a kettlebell and right arm extended out to the side crucifix style, I lower the hammer down, touch my nose, take it back up, and then take the whole thing back down to the ground the same way I came up. Which the levering the hammer kind of, you know, pays tribute to all of the old strongmen, particularly Dennis Rogers and Slim the Hammer Man and the Mighty Adam, because that's kind of, those are the big three for me in terms of the classic feats of strength. And then I wouldn't know what a Turkish get-up was if it wasn't for the RKC. So, you know, it's like all of these influences come together in the same feat. So it's very much an expression of who I am as a strength guy. And I think it's an interesting looking feat, and I'm continuing to work on it and finding ways to polish it, make it look better, and, of course, to make it more difficult, you know, going heavier with the weight and all that sort
of stuff. Do you have some of the stuff documented on YouTube?
Yeah, there's on my YouTube channel is Dave Whitley. It's written as all one word.
Okay.
And so I've got some a few feats on there. The public debut of that hammer get up, I did that when we were filming the Lessons of the Old Time Strongman DVD. Yeah. So it's on there.
Yeah.
But I look at that now, and we filmed that back in May, and I had just gotten comfortable enough with doing it to do it in front of people, and the weights that I use on that DVD were, one, what was available, which wasn't very heavy, and two, I've practiced it a lot in the past 6 months or so, so I'm better at it now than I am on the video. I'm using more weight, and it looks better to me, so it's one of those things that, you know, at the time, I'm pretty proud of it, but then looking back on it, you're like, oh, look at that cute little boy lifting those weights, you know.
And
you say that, I actually watched that on the
What do you got? Anything new coming up? Seminars, workshops, shows, anything?
I am in a little over a week leaving to go to California for the, we're having a 2-day event out there. Pavel, Dr. Mark Ching, and Mark Toomey and myself are teaching a two-day thing in Ventura called Hard Style Ventura. Pavel and Mark Toomey are going to do some body weight stuff and strength training without equipment type stuff, when I say body weight stuff. And Doc Ching is going to do some stuff with the get up, and I'm going to do some more stuff with the get up and more into the same material that's on the DVD, the Lessons of the Old Time Strongman stuff. So I'm just going to dig a little deeper into that. And then from L.A., I fly to Sydney, and I'm teaching for 3 days in Australia. And then I get back, and it's Thanksgiving. And then I've got one more workshop scheduled here in Nashville in December, and then I'm done for the year as far
people
as travel.
People can find all that on your website, I take it?
Yeah. Either on my website or on my blog.
Gotcha. So again,
Dave, tell us a little bit about how you incorporate, maybe more traditional weight training with these specific, feats that you do work towards. How do you incorporate all this stuff together?
Well, I find that a good deadlift, a good strong deadlift, has a lot of carryover to just about everything. When I was putting together the material for that DVD, I was reading a bunch of different stuff, and I was reading what's the name of the book? Anatomy Trains at the time. And there's a quote in Anatomy Trains from a guy named Feldenkrais, who has this method of body work, and that's about all I know about it. I don't know Feldenkrais's first name. I know that it has something to do with some sort of body work or movement or something, and so I apologize for being ignorant to the Feldenkrais method. But the quote from Feldenkrais was, it was talking about the connection between the emotions and the physical state, and it said that all negative human emotion is physically expressed as flexion. And if you think about that, if you get injured or if you get emotionally hurt or sad or angry or whatever, you go kind of into a ball, into this flexion. Depending on what the emotion is, you may wind up sobbing on the floor in fetal position. Or, if you get kicked in the balls, that's definitely a negative thing. You wind up all curled up like that.
Yeah.
So that really resonated with me and made a lot of sense. So I thought, well, if that's true, then the opposite, of course, has to be true. So if all negative human emotion is expressed physically as flexion, then the purest form of human joy physically expressed is a heavy deadlift.
Yeah.
And when you think about it, what makes you feel better than picking some big heavy ass weight up off the ground? Not much.
Well, I couldn't agree more. Yeah.
So,
yeah, so a resident deadlift champion.
Yeah, so I'm a big fan of the deadlift. I think it has a lot of carryover in, particularly if you do it without straps and do a double overhand grip, or if you do a double overhand with a thick bar, you can get a really heavy grip emphasis. It teaches you to move under a load very well, and it also teaches you how to generate tension. Like the ability to pull a heavy deadlift is the same kind of application of strength as bending a horseshoe or bending a difficult piece of steel. The only difference being the leverages and the individualized technique. But the ability to generate that kind of tension and to focus all of your energy into that one thing with maximal body tension, including the grip, is a very similar skill. So there's a lot of carryover between deadlifting and any of these feats of strength that I do.
That's very interesting.
Other stuff that I do, I'm a big fan of taking stuff and putting it overhead as well. I think that overhead lifting, to the 20-year-olds who don't know who Arthur Saxon is a lost or dying art. And I've kind of made it my personal jihad to bring back one-arm overhead lifting as much as I can.
Lonnie, you've spoken a lot over the years of just how referencing like some of the scenes in Pumping Iron with like Lou Ferrigno doing standing military presses and stuff, how much of a basic and triumphant, dynamic move it is just to, and in combination of what you're saying, Dave, just, picking something off the floor, which is the most mm-hmm. basic thing you can do, and then B, pushing it over your head. I mean, there's a very triumphant feeling about doing that, in any manner.
It's victory pose, isn't it?
Of course.
Yeah. I love that stuff. I, it, it,
to me, it seems like people just look for an excuse to do overhead presses, like when I just look across the gym, from everywhere except out in the middle of the floor. You know, at least when I look at sort of fitness studio kind of thing, bodybuilding kind of stuff, I always gravitate over to just some uprights and load the bar and walk out with it. And just, you know, I mean, I'm not using weights like you guys are, but there's something that's just somehow more virile about just pushing a weight up and down over your head instead of sitting down with it or, you know, snuggling into a machine. That's not okay with me.
Well, yeah, I agree with you completely. And, you know, no disrespect to anybody who's involved in any sort of exercise because, you know, I'm glad everybody's doing what they're doing. But my personal take on machines is throughout all of human history, we have invented machines for one purpose, and that's to make our lives easier.
Yep.
Isn't it kind of strange that you need some $5,000 machine to isolate the lateral aspect of your biceps while you're sitting down and doing strength and conditioning work, which by definition should involve at least some element of effort and hopefully coordinated bodily effort, you know, which is going back to the deadlift and the overhead press. Those are like the two purest things that you can do in you know, you pick it up and you put it over your head. That's work. That's, you know, physical expression of strength. You know, and nobody talks about what their one rep max on the pec deck is because nobody cares. But if I tell you that Arthur Saxon picked up a 370-pound barbell and put it over his head with one hand, or if I tell you Herman Garner deadlifted 727 pounds with one hand, suddenly you start to understand how strong these guys were and start to wonder where exactly things got lost.
Totally. Yeah, I think a lot of people are just would be stunned with – that's why I've always maintained that, like certainly in the realm of powerlifting and stuff, like in these other strength sports as well. I mean, I don't think the performance, the actual physical performance is actually – increased as much as people think. I mean, just because, you know, the biggest bench was, you know, 600 pounds 25, 30 years ago, and now it's like, you know, 1,200 pounds or something stupid.
Mm-hmm.
That's more to use your definition or word, Dave, this is more of an expression of the drugs and the equipment and the manipulation of leverages and so forth than it is the actual, you know, increase of human performance, you know, to do that.
Yeah. Yeah, you were talking about music earlier. If you go back and listen to, you know, Johnny Cash or Buddy Guy or somebody like that, or you know, even further back, somebody like Robert Johnson or you know, somebody from way back before technology existed like it is now, that music affects people on a more visceral level than, you know, Lady Gaga does.
Right.
Because it's not all electronic. So I used to play guitar for a living, so I the music parallel is very, very easy for me to make. For me, it's all about expression. And if I can express myself by bending a nail or picking up something heavy over my head, then that's great. And, you know, I don't have a problem with guys doing any of the stuff that they're doing in the sports. But I do think, like we started out talking about it, in this conversation, it's important to realize where the roots are, and it's important to realize who did what and why we're doing what we're doing now, or why we're not doing what we're not doing now, you know.
Well, it seems to me the guys who really kind of become something are the ones who eventually come back to ground zero. I mean, I can certainly only, you know, talk for myself, but the longer I train, the more I find myself constantly consciously trying to kind of reroute myself back to the beginning, you know what I mean, and kind of go back to where I was, because, you know, the meat and potatoes are where you have to be, and you have to, you know, focus yourself intensely on that, and it's very easy, you know, the more experience and the more kind of, you know, information you glean to kind of, you know, want to kind of constantly make things more and more difficult and complex, when in actuality, you just kind of want to keep going back to the zeros, you know?
You just pick up the weight and put it back down where it was already sitting. Repeat until
exactly.
You know.
I think this is actually a pretty good segue right into the topic of the day, so I'm going to go hit that.
Yeah, let's do it, man.
Do like I said, I think it was a good segue, trying to, you know, Rob mentioning, you know, coming back to the basics, this and that. One of the things Dave mentioned, you mentioned in the DVD, was that great Ralph Waldo Emerson quote about, you know, there's many methods but few principles, and the man who grasps the principles is the one that will go far. You wanted to define that for the audience, you know, what you were talking about, you know, what the principles are and what we're talking about here?
Yeah, sure. I'll butcher the quote if I try to do it from memory, but I've got it written down somewhere here, so I'll just mumble incoherently while I'm looking for it. actually not finding the quote, but that's okay. The idea being that there's methods and there are principles, and the principles are the things that don't change, and the methods should reflect those principles. And if you have someone, and this applies not just to strength, but to pretty much anything, if you bounce from method to method to method, you're halfway doing a lot of different things and never really getting anything done. If you adhere to the principles, you can choose whichever methods suit the principles and make constant, steady progress. And so realizing that it can be very confusing to look at the way someone like an Olympic lifter trains now and is able to put a massive amount of weight over his head, and then go back and look at how someone like Arthur Saxon or Herman Gerner trained, and, you know, we've evolved a lot, and things are radically different in terms of, you know, how we approach exercise, because we're all scientific and smart now. But if you look at all the different methods that have existed between then and now, it can be very daunting. And, again, going back to information overload on the Internet, if you want to go on the Internet and find out how to get strong, just about anybody who's on there that has a do-rag and an affliction T-shirt has some advice on the best way to get strong, right? And so there's all these different methods, and you can just wind up, you know, rotting your brain out collecting various different methods. And so I realized that if I just went back and kind of looked through history and found what everybody that got real strong was doing that was the same, then that's the truth. Everything else is method. And the things that they're doing that are the same are the principles. And I was shocked when I kind of started categorizing and realizing that there's only two different master principles is what I call them. And that may not be the most appropriate term, but you know what? It's my DVD, so I'll call it whatever I feel like. I call them master principles because everything else that I was able to come up with fits into one of these two categories. And the first one is practice. And that's a very broad term. That's why it's a master principle. But if you want to get better at doing pull-ups, then you need to practice pull-ups. If you want to get better at deadlifting, then you need to practice deadlifting. That means honing your technique. That means having someone coach you on what's the, you know, the optimal foot position or the, you know, any of the stuff that has to do with technical aspect or finding your own particular groove for your body leverages, you know. And the same thing's true for bending steel or tearing phone books. You have to find the particular way of doing it that best suits your body and then practice that. And that sounds so simple, but it goes over so many people's heads because everybody wants to go down to the grocery store and buy this month's issue of Muscle and Fiction and do whatever those guys are doing. And if you ever notice, it's all the same routine. I think Charles has said that before, right? that it all kind of turns out to be the same thing. But the first thing you have to do is figure out what you want to do and then practice that thing. If you want to get better at shooting a bow and arrow, no amount of playing Xbox is going to make you better at it. You have to practice shooting a bow and arrow. And the same thing's true of strength. Strength is a skill. That's one of the things that resonated early on with me from Pavel, is that strength is a skill that you need to practice. And that was the big thing that got me away from the idea of training to failure all the time and all of the stuff that goes along with that. Because if you're going to learn how to type, do you type until you start to get sloppy and then you stop, or preferably type until you don't start to get sloppy and stop before it ever even comes up on you? Or do you type until you can't move your fingers again and then come back 7 days later and try to type some more, hoping that somehow you type better? That gets lost because we're lifting things. the idea of practicing that skill gets lost. And you know, it is true of martial artists. You know, you can go in and kick a bag 500 times and have 30 of them be good kicks, or you can go in and kick 30 real good times, and you'll still be able to walk the next day and kick more the next day. So the idea of practice, it's a very broad thing, but that was the first master principle. And I call it honing the skill of strength. It's trying to make each rep that you do of whatever you're doing, and for me, it means, you know, bent pressing or bending steel or any of that sort of stuff, swinging a kettlebell, doing a get-up. A get-up is a brilliant, brilliant exercise for illustrating this principle. Trying to make each successive rep better than the rep that preceded it. Because if I tell you to go out and do 50 push-ups, then your mind is stuck on doing 50 push-ups. But if I tell you to do as many perfect push-ups as you can do, that might be 4 or it might be 75.
Yeah.
Depending on what your level of conditioning is and how good you are at push-ups. So the idea being quality reps, quality, 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 and try to improve that quality with every single rep. And if you do that, you will never get sloppy, ever. Because you've already decided ahead of time that you're going to get better, not worse. The second thing that goes along with it, the second master principle, is progressive overload. You know, everybody knows the story about Milo and the bull. Milo goes out and he picks up the calf, walks around with it every day, and the calf did what calves do. It grew into a bull. And so every day he gets, you know, a little bit bigger, and every day Milo gets a little bit stronger. There's a very good illustration of this in the book, the biography about the Mighty Atom. When the Mighty Atom ran away and joined the circus, there was a strongman and wrestler named Valenko who took the Atom under his wing and taught him how to breathe. And using what is apparently some sort of a yogic or qigong type practices, they don't really describe it in terms of technique or method, but they do talk about breathing, and you know, I'm a big fan of breathing. I'm 100% convinced that it's the most important thing any of us will do today in our lives. And if we're not doing that, then nothing else really matters. But the Atom was out in the circus with Valenko, and Valenko had him do a breathing exercise. And when he got to where he could do the movements, there were some arm movements involved. It involved taking his arms overhead, kind of in a circular type motion, is the way it's described in the book. I don't know anything beyond that as far as what the specific technique was. But then Valenko gives him a bucket to hold in each hand. And the Atom struggles through, you know, because he's a weak, sickly little child of about 14 or so. And the next day, Valenko throws a handful of sand into each bucket. And he does this every day for like a year and a half. And by the time he gets to the end of his journey with Valenko, he's got 2 full buckets of sand that are very heavy compared to what he started out with. But the increase was almost imperceptible because he took such tiny little increments in it. Marty Gallagher calls it creeping incrementalism. I'm a big fan of that. But you have to incorporate some form of progressive overload. Now, if you're a runner, then that might mean run faster or run farther rather than putting on a weighted vest and running, which I think is probably a pretty stupid idea. But anything that we do to improve performance, particularly as regards strength, we need to practice that thing, and then we need to do some sort of progressive overload with it. Do it well and then do it more to kind of, you know, distill it down into a few words.
Yeah, and I think one of the great things that you said about the progressive overload too, and you're seeing it more and more now, and I think you see it. I know I'm doing it myself, and you're seeing it from guys that have been in the game 20, 30 years. When we start young, we're all about kicking our own butts and just doing whatever it takes, and then we, like we were talking about earlier, you end up coming back to the basics, and
mm-hmm.
I think a lot of people are preaching now, just start lighter than you think you should. And you know you can, and just slowly progress, and you're going to get somewhere.
Absolutely.
And there's been a big resurgence in that. You know, like Jim Windler's 531, stuff like that. You know, he'll tell you, I'm stronger than I ever was now, and I'm doing things totally different.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. It's one of those things that, and I agree with you completely, and I've been guilty of it myself. And in my in my business, I have people who come to me and they don't feel like they got a good workout if they're not sore the next day. And I tell them, your emotions are utterly irrelevant to your progress and in my approach to programming. If you just want to get sore, I will hit you with a stick. We'll call it.
Right.
It'll save us both a lot of time, and you'll probably make just about as much progress if that's what you're focusing on.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
You know, if you start thinking about progressive overload, you know, you don't have to get sore. And if you're doing practice, you probably won't get sore, because if you're going to stop before you get sloppy, generally you're going to stop before you get fatigued to the point that it's going to cause any kind of soreness. With me and my own practice, I will I'll have a little bit of pain sometimes. Usually it's from the hardness of the steel when I'm doing bending and stuff. You know, so I have to, you know, I might get a bruise on my palm or something like that, or my skin might get a little raw on my hand in a spot if I'm doing a new feat or something like that. But certainly nothing like where I can't get out of bed in the morning, and I'm gauging how well my workout went by how difficult it is for me to walk a flight of steps or anything like that. But with the progressive overload, you can kind of break it down into various different things that are important methods, if you will, or sub-principles that go along with that. And you nailed it when you said start light. Start too light. You know, everybody wants... It strength training should not be a 4 to 12 week endeavor.
Yeah.
And I think that when we get past about 37 years old, it's easy for us to start to realize that. Do I still want to be doing this when I'm 55 or 60? And if the answer is yes, then I don't have to get it all done today, you know?
Yeah.
I just wrote an article about the same thing, and it was kind of inspired by Jim and out of Mark Ripko's place. And, you know, Jim, one of the great quotes is like, you know, screw 8 weeks to this or 10 weeks to that. He's like, I mean, that's for life. I'm not, what are you, like you said, okay, what are you going to do after 8 weeks? Turn back into a fat slob?
I was talking to Dan John not too long ago, and he said that somebody gave him the nickname along the way that he's day 91 guy. After that 90 days, what do you do then? Well, you come see me.
Yeah.
Because it's 90 days to ripped whatever, and,
you
know, that just doesn't happen. But, you know, if you want to talk about progressive overload and you want to talk about getting strong, there's a few things that again, it looks to me like everybody through history has done some variation on. The first thing they do is they work with big multi-joint movements, squats, deadlifts, presses, pull-ups, things like that. You don't really see a whole lot of guys who got big and strong doing one-arm preacher curls early on. Now, you know, you take the guys who are huge bodybuilders and they're working on the fine detail stuff, sure, those guys are big and strong and they're doing one-arm preacher curls. They didn't get 20-inch arms with those. They got 20-inch arms doing bent-over rows and bench presses and dips,
yeah.
You know. So primarily working with big multi-joint movements is something that everybody needs to do if they want to get strong. I mean, people look at the icing and they don't see the cake on those guys, I think. You know, and if you don't believe me, anybody that's listening doesn't believe me, work up to where you can do about 10 pull-ups with 100 pounds strapped around your waist and let me know what your arms look like. I promise you, you'll have guns with two Zs. You said it earlier, starting out light, it gets missed. If you start out too light, it gives you plenty of room to grow and time to practice that technique, because if it's too heavy, you kind of go into panic mode and you go for quantity, not quality, of the rep. You know, you get just stuck on, I've got to lift this weight, rather than I've got to do this rep as perfectly as possible. So everybody thinks they're advanced, you know, but just because you got 3,000 posts on some internet forum somewhere and you're still living in your mom's basement and you're 17, that does not make you an advanced lifter. It just doesn't.
I mean, one I like to use, you know, if you got a hurdle to go over, is it better to start right at the hurdle or to get back and get a running start?
Yeah. Thank you. That's one that I haven't ever used, but I'll be stealing that analogy for sure. And then the other thing we talked about a little bit already, progress slowly. You know, everybody wants to add 100 pounds to their deadlift in 8 weeks or 60 pounds to their bench press in 8 weeks. But, you know, what have you done in the past year? And, you know, the stronger you get, the less those jumps are going to be. You know, it's easy for somebody who's in their first year to add 100 pounds to their deadlift, but you take a guy like, you know, Donnie Thompson, if he adds 5 pounds to his deadlift in a competition, then he's pleased. Yeah. Of course, he's deadlifting 900 pounds to begin with, so it's all relative. But, you know, and if you're doing deadlifts with 315 for five sets of five right now today, hush, girl, my dog is letting me know the mail's running. Sorry about that.
It adds into the Halloween theme.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I got live effects. But, like, if you're deadlifting for five sets of five with, say, 315, and you add 5 pounds a month, that doesn't sound like much. But in 4 years, you're pulling five sets of five with 550. And to me, that's approaching full-grown man status. You know, that's serious. The other one is track your progress. Everybody wants to progress. Nobody talks, you know, I get this a lot with my clients who come to me for fat loss. Like, I've tried everything and nothing works. What'd you have for breakfast last Wednesday? I don't know. Then you haven't tried everything because you're not writing down what you ate. You know, my bench press is stalled. Well, what's your best set of three last week? What? You know. It gets into one of those things where people either aren't tracking progress at all or they're not tracking in meaningful ways. And I think that there are a few different things that you can track that are meaningful. I don't think the one rep max is as important as a lot of people think that it is, unless you're in a sport that involves you lifting a one rep max, like powerlifting, Olympic lifting. If your three rep max goes up or your five rep max goes up, then you got stronger, even if you never tested your one rep max. So, you know, it doesn't really matter what you're measuring in terms of weight or intensity. What matters is that you measure it consistently, because if you pull 315 for five reps today and then next week you pull 600 for a single, did you get stronger? I don't know, because you're not comparing the same thing. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. And, you know, this goes to what I say to a lot of guys who are, like, you know, purist bodybuilders and stuff. And, you know, you talk about strength and so forth, and so many of them, you know, lose the as you say, the principles. And they say it's all relative to what you're doing. I mean, because, you know, they'll make arguments like, well, I'm not a powerlifter, so I don't care what I can bench press for one and stuff. And it's like, but it's all relative. I mean, you can compare your relative strength gain, which, of course, is going to be completely mirrored by and reflected by your physique in any kind of range that you want. I mean, if you're squatting 315 for, you know, eight this year, and next year you're doing the exact same, you know, reps with 365 with the same quality of repage, I mean, I defy anybody to tell me different, that you're going to, your physique is going to reflect that, you know. So it's specific to what you're doing. I mean, strength doesn't always have to be discussed in terms of one rep max. So I completely know what you're saying, and I agree with 100%.
Yeah. Now we say that, but of course there is only one true scientific definition of strength, and that is something that you can do that I cannot do. If you can do something I can't do, then you're strong.
Yeah.
But if I can do it, then you're not, you know. Yeah. But I think it's important to track progress in meaningful ways. You know, you can certainly track how much weight's on the bar, but that's only one thing. You can track density. I'm a big fan of that. You know, if I do 20 reps of something and it takes me 15 minutes this week, and then a month from now I do 20 reps with the same amount of weight and it only takes me 8 minutes, then something got better.
Yeah.
You know, or if in 15 minutes I'm doing 40 reps instead of 20, something got better. I'm a big fan of that. Yeah. You know, density, volume. If I can do 10 quality reps today, and then in a month I'm able to do 20 quality reps regardless of time frame, I just increased overall volume, weight stayed the same, then something good happened there. Something got better. So I just encourage people not to get tied up to the one rep max.
And that's a wonderful way to just increase overall intensity too. I've always said, you know, trying to get the same volume, you know, the workload accomplished in smaller increments of time, for sure.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And you've got to have more than one way to progress, because, I mean, you can't just always slap even another quarter pound on the bar. You know, you're going to run out. So it's, you know, doing it for two singles instead of one single, or, you know, like you said, breaking the density down into less time, this and that. And, but, you know, again, you got to then compare apples to apples. I mean,
yes.
Yeah. So let's touch on one more thing before we let you go. You mentioned one of the things that's not used enough now is isometrics. You want to talk about that a little bit?
Sure. Big fan of isometrics. Probably the guy who in the old days developed it or was most famous for developing isometric stuff and kind of being public with it is a guy named Alexander Zass, whose stage name was either the Great Samson or the Mighty Samson, some variation on that. And he developed it sort of by accident, is my understanding of it. And I'm not an expert on this guy, so I may be blurring some of the facts somewhere along the way. But if I do, I apologize to anyone who can come back and prove me wrong or correct me. I accept those corrections because that's an important thing, I think. But Zass was alive in the late 1800s, early 1900s, around in that period of time. And if I'm not mistaken, he was Polish. And he was in Europe, and I think he was a Jew. I'm not sure, but I think he was Jewish. And so, you know, early 1900s, Europe being Jewish, not the most hospitable environment in the world. So he got arrested several times and was locked away in jail, and used this opportunity working with these isometrics to eventually be able to break out of jail by bending the bars. He would just do isometric work on those bars, and eventually he pulled them apart. And later on, as things got better for him, he realized that he could break chains and bend metal. And there's some YouTube clips of him. If you search Alexander Zass, Mighty Samson or the Great Samson, something like that on YouTube, there's an old like newsreel footage of him breaking chains and coiling up steel and taking body shots from these guys. They'd just walk up and punch him in the stomach, and he just kind of stands there and says it tickles or something like that. But, you know, again, nothing new going on here. Isometrics a long time ago. I first heard about isometrics probably because of Bruce Lee. And, again, Bruce Lee seems very old school to us now because that was 30-something years ago. But really it's not. He was taking stuff that he had picked up along the way and absorbing what's useful and discarding what he didn't find use for. And so I first heard about it probably from Bruce Lee back in the day. Dennis Rogers, who taught me just about everything I know about bending steel, is a huge proponent of isometrics, of taking a piece of steel that you can't bend and getting it in a position that is the same as you would be using to bend something of a similar size, and working isometrics in there for 3 to 5 reps that last 5 to 10 seconds in each position. And I've used this after he talked to me about it, and it's amazing how much improvement you can make and how quickly you can make it. I think it's because isometrics teach us how to exert a maximum effort or generate maximum amount of tension in a very safe environment. You know the thing that you're pressing against isn't going to move, or the thing that you're trying to bend isn't going to move. So you can figure out where that place is in your brain that lets you unload everything that you've got into it. It develops a tremendous amount of power and tension at the point of effort. So if you have that sticking point in your range of motion for whatever exercise or drill that you're doing or whatever feat you're trying to do, if you do isometrics at that sticking point, it makes the sticking point stronger. And because there's such a sustained contraction, there's a tremendous mental concentration and tie together for the mind and the ability to generate force. A mind-body connection. I hate using that phrase, but it really is. It's increasing that mental concentration and kind of focusing, blocking everything else out. By focus, I think focus is a misunderstood word sometimes too. It doesn't mean magnify. It means remove distraction, or at least in my brain, you know. So I think isometrics can can are a very valuable tool for teaching all that stuff. And to go back and talk about the Mighty Atom again, he when he was in his travels with Valenko, he wound up in India, and they met the wrestler Gama. Some people may be familiar with him that are listening. I don't know if you guys know who I'm talking about or not, but he was a very famous Indian wrestler back in the early 1900s or so. And when he had met Gama, he saw him at a match, and he was outsized, and just to look at him, he was physically outmatched by this opponent. And the Atom just knew that the Gama was about to get his butt handed to him. And when the two wrestlers actually tied up, Gama just threw him over and over and over again. The guy couldn't do anything with him. And so afterwards, Mighty Atom's talking to Gama, and he says, "I don't understand. This guy was so much bigger than you, and but you're throwing him all over the place like he's a child." And Gama says, "You want to know how I did that?" And Adam's like, "Yeah." So he says, "Okay, when I was a child, I would go out in the backyard, and we had a tree, and I would tie my belt around this tree, and I would try to throw it. And I did this every day for 20 years. Now, you know, this may be embellished or whatever, but it's a good story. But he would go out, and he would try to throw this tree. So what he's describing is that he would put his belt around this tree and get in position to do this particular throw and exert this isometric force against it. So the Atom says, "Did you ever succeed?" And he says, "No, I never threw the tree, but after pulling on a tree, throwing a man is very easy."
Right.
So that just kind of illustrates that point of going and doing the isometric work in your sticking point. And, you know, scientifically what you're doing, my understanding of it anyway, is that you're increasing the neural output in that particular spot in the range of motion, and you're making that neural pathway stronger so that you're getting a stronger muscular contraction there, which that's all strength is, right?
Wonderful. No, that's good info. We're about out of time here, so I just want to thank you for coming, Dave. I want to mention your websites again, nationalkettlebell.com and irontamerdavewhitley.com, if I think I have it correct.
Just irontamer.com will take you there.
Okay, irontamer.com.
Less for people to remember, just irontamer.com.
There you go. Check out his YouTube channel. Get out to one of those workshops if you're in Australia. I know we got some listeners there.
Yeah.
Check them out. So,
I very much enjoyed having you on, Dave. This has been a great show, man.
I appreciate it. If I can make one little shameless pitch here, if you go to the website, you go to the YouTube stuff, and you like what you see, please go to Dave Draper's site, davedraper.com, and pick up the DVDs. And if you're interested in having me come and do a show for your event, then I'm available for that. I'm booking myself into 2011 right now. I've got about an hour-long show that I do. There's some motivational speaking involved with it and mind over matter and all that fun stuff. But I don't like to hard sell that, but I do like to mention it when I'm on a show like this. So, people know.
I can personally attest to the DVD. It's a great DVD. That's why I called and had Dave come on. I mean, he bends a lot of things, and like he says, throws out trash to the audience. So it's pretty neat, and then just packages good information. So thanks for coming. Everybody have a happy Halloween.
All right, appreciate it.
Happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween, everybody.
Cool, guys.
The Iron Radio Podcast and all of the audio on ironradio.org is for informational purposes only. If you're interested in starting a diet or exercise program, it's important to check with your physician. Also, seek the help of registered dietitians, athletic trainers, and qualified exercise physiologists in order to make the progress that you need.